Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I have Jordan Crabtree with me. Hey, Jordan.
Hi. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So Jordan is here because he made this wonderful film, The Myth of Winter, and it was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2020, and I'm kind of proud of this. It won the award for Outstanding Performance by an Inanimate Object, although I didn't say inanimate very well. But Myth of Winter is this great film. I won't give too much away. Or we can totally do spoilers. It's up to you.
Yeah, sure. Why not? It's a short.
It's about a shopping cart. It's wonderful. It's about a shopping cart with a soul, essentially. There's more to it than that, and you'll hear that in this interview. But what I'm really excited to say is The Myth of Winter is in the Discover Indie Film TV series in Season 4, Episode 5. It's actually one of my favorite episodes, because that's the episode with Kids Don't Die, and then your film, The Myth of Winter, and then Counterweight. Three really, really unique original films. And like I do with everyone who has a film in the TV series for Discover Indie Film, we bring them in and we talk to them and find out what inspired them and what brought them to where they are today. So Jordan, go ahead. Tell me, what got you into filmmaking?
Certainly. Well, for the longest time growing up, I had like no idea what I kind of wanted to do. I'm just kind of like idling along. And it wasn't until my freshman year of high school when we were assigned like a group project in English, and one of the options was you could do a video project. And I was like, okay, why not? It was about the Odyssey, Homer's Odyssey. It's like, all right, why not? Let's do a video project. And I had an old camera my parents had, and so I started filming the project with my friends. And it wasn't until the editing process where I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. And I just started doing more and more of that, whereas outside of school, I was just making my own silly short films and whatnot. And just, it's all kind of goofy stuff back in the day, which when you look back on now, it's kind of a little cringy, but you know what? You're having fun doing it. So that's what matters. And it wasn't until when I became a junior and senior that I started really taking it seriously. Oh, I can do this for a living, because I can't really see myself doing anything else, or I wouldn't be happy doing anything else. So that's kind of the path I took. So I did, we didn't really have a film class at my high school, but we did have like a media broadcast class. So we did like the morning announcements. We did kind of like a newsroom segment where each morning for 2 hours, we would shoot various footage. I would be one of the anchors talking about the campus news, and we'd broadcast it there each day. So yeah, that's kind of what my upbringing, my origin story.
That sounds really cool. Well, and so you were screwing around with video, though.
Yes.
Like as a hobbyist, like just doing fun stuff. Like was that just... was it skateboarding? Was it narratives? Were you writing stories? Were you guys in front and behind the camera?
Well, for the longest time, it was like, yeah, it was kind of like both in front and behind the camera, mainly because I had a very small group of friends, and in order to, no one really wanted to kind of be a part of these things, but except for like a few loyal group of people. And so we just kind of like take turns handing off the camera to each other and like hop in front of the camera and hop behind the camera. And then, we did our first kind of narrative one in, summer between my junior and senior year, which was great, and still pretty good friends with those guys. No real skateboarding videos, but which is something I kind of want to get into though, because I always like love that concept. I love that aesthetic, like the grittiness of it, and something I'd want to explore more though.
So and the news thing in high school, I got to admit that sounds really cool to me, because my high school era in the 80s. It was just audio, like there was just a speaker in the classroom. So there were actually TV screens in classrooms, and you guys were producing essentially TV news for the school?
Yes, we were. Our teacher, she came from news media. Like this was her first teaching job. She came from broadcast news. And so she was just walking us through what you do for a newsroom. And yeah, there's like TVs in each room, like in the corner, upper corner of each class, and around like 9 o'clock each morning, the news would go on. It wasn't live. We kind of pre-recorded the, like an hour or so before, and then we just kind of broadcast it then. But, each day, 5 days a week, we'd do the news for
our
campus.
That's a lot of work. And I assume you're implying it was edited to make sure that no one cursed or goofed off.
Yeah. You know, cursed, a little censorship there and there. And also there'd be other little segments we'd kind of plug in where it's like, oh, here's what, a fun little theme for the homecoming week is. And whatnot. So it'd be like fun little sketches and videos that would accompany this broadcast.
I mean, that's actually a lot of work.
It is. Yeah, it is a lot of work, but a lot of fun, because yeah, just being able to do at that time. It's like, oh, wow, this is actually pretty special. This is like a really fun thing to do.
I think so. And I'll add, I forgot to ask what part of the country you were growing up in.
Oh, yes. I grew up in Houston, Texas.
Houston.
Houston, Texas for 18 years. I went out to school in North Carolina at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts for film school. So stayed out there for 4 years, and now I moved to Los Angeles, Sherman Oaks, in fact, in 2015.
So, which is excellent. So I'm going to jump back to high school and ask, so not everyone who gets interested in stuff goes to film school or goes to an undergraduate program with a focus on that. So was that teacher instrumental in that, or did you just fall in love with the medium by then and you knew that's what you wanted to major in?
By then, I already knew this is what I wanted to do. I don't want to do anything else, but that teacher and other people that I grew up with were instrumental in helping and supporting me kind of go down this path. Everyone was like willing to lend a hand if asked. So I couldn't have done it without them as well back then in the day.
Very but, cool.
Yeah.
So then when you got to the undergraduate program, was it very hands-on? Was it theoretical?
It was a combination of both, but very hands-on. The reason why I chose that school, North Carolina School of the Arts, was because in your freshman year, you are already, in your first month, you're already on a set of a senior's thesis project. You're either like a production assistant working in the art department or a gripper electric moving stuff around. And the students do everything. The school funds like a $5,000 short film for 15 minutes. You're handling industry gear. You have like Reds and Alexas there that the kids use. Where you're using like industry standard editing software, Avid, Premiere Pro. Like it's a very, very hands-on program that, and the entire film school is on kind of like a mini studio lot. There's like three sound stages. There's a scoring stage that the music students come in, and the conductors from the graduate program scores the music students and composes and records the themes from there. And yeah, it's a great, great program.
Yeah, that sounds really impressive. I can name people I know who have careers solely because they knew how to use an Alexa. Because yeah. I remember there was a point when Netflix might come up later in this conversation, but Netflix decided all stand-up comedy specials had to be shot on the Alexa because they wanted the film look. And then if you were an Alexa expert, boom. So you guys had really good equipment there.
Oh, we did, yeah. And one of the part-time jobs you can do there is work in the tech ops facility, which is kind of like lending out the equipment to certain projects that are going out certain weekends. So you're just getting like hands-on experience of like what the equipment is, how to use it, what's the proper safety procedures, because safety was the biggest thing that they drilled on us, which is, of course, you have to know that. So yeah, highly, highly good instrumental place to go to, especially if you don't know anyone in the industry or you don't know like how to get your foot in. This is a great, great place to go because that's how I got my first foot in the industry. It's because one of my friends who's 2 years older than me, he, when I first moved to LA, he brought me onto this independent movie as their accounting clerk. And I only got that job because he knew me from going to that school. So yeah, that's it paid off for that.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. And it sounds like it fostered a community, but tell me about your projects there. How many films did you make? 4 year program, I assume?
Yes. 4 year program. And so each year for your first 2 years, you make films. So in your first year, you make like a 5 minute film with, and everyone in your class is, fills in all the other roles. So someone's the DP, someone's the production designer, someone is the art director, and you're the director and writer. And you're on the soundstage. You're using kind of like basic comics, basic sets, just like a table, window, chairs, and you just kind of have to frame a story within that. In your second year, you're given a little bit more leeway. You can go off campus. You can, and it's 7 minutes long, and you get $500. You get $500 to shoot with whatever camera you'd want, whatever story you choose. And you kind of get a little bit more freedom that way. Then in your junior and senior year, they can up it to $1,000 and $5,000. And that's when you get the Alexas and Reds and you can play with the big toys there. So that's exciting.
But also those budgets are complemented by the fact that you have free crew built in.
Oh yeah.
And free equipment and sound stages. So yeah, $500 to shoot a film, different math when you have all those assets.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And like you said, just like it's kind of the, you have your own crew built in, so you don't have to like kind of spend the budget on the kind of crew or renting a soundstage for that because it already kind of comes with you. And you don't the money for your film doesn't come out of your own pocket. The school provides that for you, which I thought was fantastic, considering coming from a place where someone who couldn't really afford NYU or UCLA or USC, it's like, wow, this is like the most affordable option for someone who wants to get into this industry.
Right, because a lot of those schools, you pay a big tuition and you spend a lot on your films.
Exactly.
Whereas this, you might be paying tuition, but it's sort of coming back.
Oh, yeah, it's coming back. It gives you the tools and equipment necessary to do what you want.
So tell me about those films. Anything you loved, anything, or was it, go ahead, tell me.
Oh, certainly. My sophomore year film that I produced, just very small film, one of the directors, great guy. We directed it. It went on to premiere at this like short film selection at the Cannes Film Festival back in 2012, I believe. And then in 2013, worked with another director there, shot this other short film about like an astronaut mother and her daughter being separated by a kind of a supernatural scientific force. And another good thing about this film school is that they also play around with visual effects. So they were kind of experimenting with all these new visual effects software and technology with our short films. So
I was going to say, that sounds pretty ambitious.
Yeah, it's like the school kind of selects certain shorts of like, okay, we want to kind of test out our new equipment with this film, so we'll go ahead and green light this for you so you can like play around and toy with the equipment with what you want there.
Which is, wow. So that's like, we just bought something state of the art and they ask you to play with it.
Certainly, yeah. It's, right. it's like, hey, because the way that certain films would go forward is that for the third and fourth year films, it's like you can go there and like pitch to the faculty, hey, this is the story I want to direct or write next year. What do you think about this? And there's kind of a waiting period to get back to you. And from based off of that, they kind of like select a few that would be like kind of good, kind of a tent pole. Like, here's what would attract eyes for other people to kind of look at our school and look at these films and students. And I think that was one of them that they wanted. It was like, hey, you know what? We just got this technology. Let's go ahead and make it. Why not?
Very cool. So was the school fairly new? Was it?
It's been around for 20 years. It's still
just well established.
Well established. Like David Gordon Green was like one of the alums. Jeff Nichols, Danny McBride, they all went there. So it's up and coming.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. It's just they sound so positive, and I don't even know what adjective to use, but it sounds like such a nurturing environment where the school is also looking to do best for itself as well as the students.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I really enjoyed being there at the school, because they really established that this is a film school that where you're here to make films. We also want you to study them as well. So every weekend there's like three theaters on campus where every weekend at 7 p.m. and 9:30 they play films in like 35mm, 70mm, and Blu-ray DVDs. They like play it every weekend. And that was another kind of like huge fun aspect of going there where it's like, hey, you know what? Pink Floyd's The Wall is playing tonight in 70mm. You know what? I'm going to go there and watch it today. And so just stuff like that. Where else can you see that in 70mm? I mean, you can see in LA, but like if you're in North Carolina, in the middle of nowhere, it's like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to take this time and go out and watch this. Really cool film.
Yeah, and the theater probably wasn't full of smoke like it would if it was a midnight movie here.
Yeah. So
that's excellent. That's so cool. So you also got to build up your cinematic library of knowledge in your head.
Oh yeah, because like there's like they would screen stuff that I would no way I would go out and see it now. It's like, you know, why not? I want to see it. But I was there going there. I was like, yeah, sure. Well, Suspiria, what's this? Sure, I'll go see the Dario Argento like 1970 movie of that horror movie. It's one of my favorites now. I'm like, wow, this is great. The music, the color, the vibrancy of it it's amazing.
That sounds like a great program. I'm so glad you heard. How'd you learn about it?
One of the teachers from my high school, he went there for their summer program. He recommended it to me and I went there and it changed my life.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, it sounds like it was all positive. Did you hit the festival circuit with any of those films or?
There was a few films that hit the festival circuit, like the 2012 film. It went to Cannes. That was kind of the main big one that we went to with that. A few others, but no other real festival circuit for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really.
Yeah.
I mean, we get at the film festivals, we get student films, but there's so many student film festivals, even just based inside the schools themselves, that I know, like, you know, students aren't totally enthusiastic about trucking around the country with their with their latest thing. Also, because, and are you proud of what you did there?
I am proud of what I did. What I'm most proud about is like the friendships and relationships I made there, because, you know what, that still sticks with me, because almost my entire community of people out here are still people that I went to school with. So I met my current girlfriend from there. She was a dancer. I met my roommate. He was near below me. He's still living with me out here. It's just great.
That's really cool. I actually have heard that from some other people, like, you know, colleges have a presence here, and that's great. That's great that you're all invading LA.
Yep.
So was it straight from school to LA, or did you?
Yeah, it was like pretty much straight from school to LA. I took like some time off in between, like a few months during the summer off to do, just kind of explore, go to London, see some family. And then from there, moved out here in August, tried to adjust kind of living out here, on the West Coast. I did come out to LA the summer before for an internship, as like a reader for scripts and doing seeing what LA is like and what's that about.
Otherwise known as the most important unpaid job in Hollywood.
Exactly.
Because no one reads anything except those interns.
Exactly.
And then you learned how to write up coverage.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, we did coverage with that. And so, and one of the managers there taught me how to do coverage and the ins and outs of what to do. And so he's a great guy.
I think there's so much value to that, because
how many
people come to this town and they have no idea that this, what they're writing, and when they give it to someone,
how to get feedback.
And you knew that it would be someone else reading it and then writing up notes on it. Like, I think it's really valuable to know
that. It's a very valuable life skill to have.
And you're reading a ton of screenplays.
Oh, yeah. Just everything like that would be on your day where you go in, like, there's a huge pile of scripts on your desk, kind of go through them, kind of do your other work as well. Then you kind of go back to the scripts and just trying to cut down that pile, which constantly builds.
And you learn just how shitty most scripts are.
Exactly. Nicer words than I would say, but yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, no, you don't seem to be like the kind who would curse, but I just find it's funny to
just let it go
now and then. Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, so that was an internship. So then you came out here.
Yes.
And when did Myth of Winter work in?
Yeah, so came out here in 2015, a few years, directed this other short film in 2019 before Myth of Winter called The Myth of Summer, which is kind of a spiritual sequel to The Myth of Winter, whereas The Myth of Winter was kind of shot with a Sony camcorder, very shaky, very grainy. You feel the aesthetic on it. This one was more traditional narrative, kind of focusing on two sisters set in the kind of same world. It's the world that this is like a the suburbs of the future, where it's just like we all have our own like kind of problems. We're saying goodbye to our sister who's leaving for college, but like there's a shopping cart that's like in the way, like you're trying to shoot away like a stray dog, and like she wants to show you this one last cool thing, and that cool thing is these abandoned robots in the middle of the desert, and you just have this bonding moment with your sister there. And that's kind of what The Myth of Summer was about, of kind of taking these small slice of life moments and putting them in a fantastical world. And so with Myth of Winter, I kind of wanted to do the same thing, but like I just really want to play around with this camcorder I had, because I just love the look, I love the aesthetic, because just shooting with it, it's a time machine. You're shooting with a time machine, because it instantly transports you to a home video that, wait, is this my memory? I'm not sure it is, but I think it might be now. It's just kind of this weird, surreal, like, way, and you're watching this, and you see, like, oh, there's a shopping cart moving on its own through here. Huh, that's a weird memory I never knew I thought it had. But I just wanted to kind of capture a slice of life home video moment through Myth of Winter, or to tell Myth of Winter through that method.
I have to say, it took me until you described Myth of Summer to nail down that you're really into sci-fi.
I love coming of age sci-fi. That's that's kind of what I kind of grew up with growing up, and just the environment I grew up in, because I grew up like 10 minutes away from NASA Mission Control. And so just living with that, I just wanted to kind of create a heightened, exaggerated world of that and put that on display in film.
For sure. For sure. And for those who don't know, right after this podcast, we're going to hear your favorite films in that Discovery New Film 4 question. So I'm not going to ask you what your favorite sci-fi is, but it is cool to... It's funny, because I hadn't even thought of Myth of Winter as sci-fi. But it certainly is. It certainly qualifies.
Yeah.
To me, it's a very human story.
I guess it is sci-fi,
But sci-fi can be human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like the... like these robots, like you wouldn't necessarily think of a shopping cart as a robot, but this thing, it falls around. It can emote. It has feelings. It can feel sorrow. It's And that's kind of what I wanted to show with this. Of like, I want the audience to care for a shopping cart and fall in love with a shopping cart before bad things happen to shopping cart.
I got to say, well, I'll entertain you with some comments on the film or admiration of the film. Because I think it's actually a great film to really invest in as a fan. But I'll get to that in a second. Or maybe I'll say it right now because I just made myself forget what I was going to ask you. But I just think the film is so good, and I love that. So when I watched it again this morning before talking to you, you have that argument. Well, first we meet Chip the shopping cart, but then there's the argument that the young woman, and by the way, obviously spoilers, but there is that, you know, a parent's yelling at her inside the house, and you hear like you're just like she was. And now the shopping cart has come to her, and I just went ahead and decided, you know what? The soul of the mother who left is in that cart.
Oh, yeah. That's a very interesting way of interpreting
it. You know what I
mean?
Like, because it comes to her. Like, it's, you start the film, and it's heading right. It's waiting for her to come out. Mm-hmm. And then when I finally put that together, that you're just like she was, I was like, oh, the cart is, you know, not just a robot. It's got a soul. And it might. So anyway, that was my hilarious, ridiculous reading way too much into it.
Oh, thing. No, I mean, I love it. Cause like, that's the thing I never even like kind of like thought of or engaged, but hey, I just hearing someone and seeing someone else's like perspective onto this or what they take out of it. That's amazing. I love it. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, thank you for not thinking I'm crazy. So the writing of it, you just sat down and wrote it out first.
So with this, I also just wrote like a generic outline of like, hey, here's what all we're going to do. We're going to start off at A, we're going to get to B at some point. In the middle, we're going to have some fun and play around. Why not? Let's see where we go from here. A very mumblecore movie with like a shopping cart. Why not? So yeah, we just kind of went to, I knew there was like various locations around the area that I grew up in that I wanted to film at that could really kind of capture the essence. Such as that one park with like those giant cranes in the background. It's like, oh, this is like so sci-fi because I remember driving by there every time at night and you just see their like enormous outline, their like silhouettes kind of like casted in shadow and like faint, like the red beacons on top of them. And it just reminded me of those AT-ATs from Star Wars. It's just like, oh, something huge is there. And it's like sci-fi bigger than this world that I just kind of wanted to capture and emulate into this just kind of normal lifestyle. And so I just kind of picked out these few locations that we wanted to shoot at. And from there, just kind of want to formulate a story. Okay, from right here, this is where they'll kind of like frolic, have some fun, goof around. And this other point, this is where they'll kind of look off longingly in the distance, you know. And it's kind of funny because actually I was intending to shoot a lot more footage with this, but the video cassette that we had, I thought we had like packed like a bunch more, but we only packed one and we only had one day to shoot it. And so we only realized this with like 10 minutes of footage left on the video cassette. So right in that moment, we had to decide, okay, what is essential? What is necessary? What can we do? What certain sequences do we, I know for certain need multiple takes that we have to kind of get right. And from that, it was kind of like, okay, if we're really going to high gear now shooting up from like just on our hip, what do we need? And so from there, it was kind of a very fun, challenging, but wouldn't recommend doing that again. Always be prepared. Always come with backups. Make sure you have your backups. That's what I would take away from this.
Always backup. But at the same time, I can't help but think that, you know, I'm a bit nostalgic for the days when people shot on film because that's what I grew up on. And the limit of the medium, the fact that every second you shot, you knew you were burning through like 90 feet per second if it was 35. And
yeah,
I think it was 35 feet per second if it was Super 16 or whatever. But, you know, you were limited. You knew you couldn't overshoot. And like if you had had 20 VHS cassettes or VHS tapes, we used to call them, right? Because you were shooting on VHS?
Or it was like a digital videotape.
Oh, so, DV. Mini
yeah,
DV?
Yeah, mini DV. That's it, yeah.
Did you run it through a process to give it a more VHS-y look after that? Or is that...
It just came
out.
That's
what mini DV looks like.
That's what it looks like. Yeah. Just like, yeah, from there, hooked up a cord from the camera to my Mac and just imported the footage that way.
I mean, I'll share an embarrassing thing, which is, I guess I'm so old, and this is I get tired of the Jeff is so old comments, but I'm so old that I think of mini DV as like when things like VHS was wiggly and then we got mini DV and it was like, oh, it's digital. It's way sharper. So it's so funny for me to look back and I can't even tell the difference between the two. When I can tell you when mini DV came out, it was like, oh my God, this looks so amazing. We finally have pro stuff at home. And it's like, it's not.
Yeah, it's funny how you look back on certain stuff like that. Because, like, for instance, just another little example is, like, when DVDs first came out, always wanted to get, you know, the full-screen DVD. You know, why would you want widescreen? Because it's, like, it cuts, there's those bars in the top. You don't want that. But now it's, like, oh, we don't want widescreen because it gets the whole frame and footage. And
right, yeah. You were anti-letterboxing at first?
Yeah, I was very much, like, full, like, I want the whole picture. But back then you didn't know any better.
yeah, absolutely. All right, so you shot it. So you wrote it here, you planned it out here, and then you went back to Houston to shoot it?
Yes. So I shot it over over Christmas time, planned out here. And for the actress that we used, that was actually my younger sister, because I just needed someone like, hey, I need you to do all these ridiculous things. Please, I'll pay you. I'll buy you a jacket. And it's the jacket that she wore in the movie, because it's like, hey, I need something red and that will pop. Which jacket would you like? Which would you prefer? And so she got to pick which one she would want. Like, here's your wrap gift. You can keep it. But
so you had to bribe your own sister.
Yeah, I did. But for the shopping cart, my younger cousin was the one who was operating it. So off camera, he was like the one that was pulling the fishing line or pushing it off with like a duct tape broom handle at the bottom, just kind of move it along, make sure that it can move across rough terrain. So that's kind of what we did there. But yeah, I was like mainly outlining it over here in LA, kind of ordering all the essential equipment that we would need, all like the mini DVs that never ended up using. in the end, just finding the shopping cart as well. Just like, okay, I think I found one here. We'll grab it and use it. But yeah,
that was the obvious next question. I'm like, did you go snag a shopping cart and then return it when you were done?
We kind of like just snagged a shopping cart, but fun fact, I still have that shopping cart. And
does it still have like the extra box on it?
It does.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
So, it's not attached at the moment, but it's still, we still have it. It still works. We put Christmas lights in it, so that would make it kind of like glow and beep and flash some color with it.
And were you impressed with how it turned out? Like were you impressed? Because obviously you didn't like test what it would be like to attach a broom handle and push it along. Like, did you look at the footage and go, my God, it really does look like it's alive? Or were you?
So in Myth of Summer, we did a thing where we moved the shopping cart with just like very thin fishing lines. So I was like, okay, I knew this one method could work. And I knew that for Myth of Winter, it'd have to go over some pretty rough terrain, like rocky mud, like grass. And I was like, okay, I'm going to talk to one of my friends who's in special effects. How would you do this? Do we need to attach a motor to this thing? Like, how would you move the shopping cart around? And then he was just like, yeah, just get a broom handle, duct tape it to the bottom, push it along. So very simple gun, no motors or anything like that. Choose a simple route, simple cost-effective route.
Hey, it worked perfectly. I'm so glad you met somebody or had someone around to ask who would just give you the basic analog solution. Yeah, just push it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, I highly recommend that. Just ask questions. Ask for advice everywhere. That's a huge, huge part.
I have to tell you, it came out so wonderfully. And I really can't express enough how much I appreciate the originality of it.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that.
And how well I just think that shopping cart's alive. You know, if you haven't watched the film, seriously, you got to go watch this film somehow, whether you watch it on the Discovery New Film TV series or not. Like, it's just really cool. I'm not crazy. This is a cool film.
Thank you for saying that. We're really proud of that one.
And were you planning more myths?
I do have some stuff outlined for like a potential Myth of Autumn, Myth of Spring, what those are. Still waiting to kind of more concrete ideas to come forth, but something is in the pipeline, but when is a still TBD.
Cool. And I think that time I interrupted myself, I was going to ask, so when you were planning this out, was it while just working gigs here in LA? And
oh yeah, it was like when I was working gigs, like when I was like ordering something for this one job, I like go on the other site and like, okay, here's what I'm going to shoot. I'm going to order all the stuff, all the food here, and then send it off and go back to my other tab and just like finish my real job. So yeah, just like working on these like little gigs in the meantime while I do my other jobs out here in LA.
Makes sense. That's how you're supposed to do it. And that's the great thing about being young too, is that you can do like a job and then like do a project on the side.
Oh yeah.
Cause let me warn you, like 10, 20 years from now, you'll just have the energy for like half a job.
Yep. Trying to get them all at once. So
totally. So you don't waste your youth. Well, what else have you been working on features and any scripts more?
Yes. At the moment, I have written a feature script that I'm hoping to direct sometime either next year or the year following. We have like a producer involved and attached. We're really excited about this one. It's very close and personal. It's like a Latina family drama comedy. Very small, self-contained, and looking forward to it. We're just finding all the right places, everything to kind of come forward with that, all the right pieces, funding, cast, crew, all that.
So but it sounds, when you say small and self-contained, it sounds like you wrote it to make it possible to
yes.
shoot.
Yeah, it's completely written. It's possible to shoot. 2-3 locations here in LA. That's what we're trying to do.
Fantastic. Sounds good. Anything else going on with that, or?
No, at the moment, just trying to find funding. That's our main goal.
And you're working hard, and you're working. When you showed up here to record, you let me know you've been working for Netflix a bit here and there.
Yeah, I did a Netflix job back in November. Just got off an Amazon gig that started in January, ended that in June. So yeah, it's the life of a freelancer right now, just kind of hopping from one streaming platform to the next.
That's so. I mean, once again, I'm dating myself, but it used to be like everyone just cared if they were working. You know, I worked for Warner Brothers this weekend and another. Now it's like, it's all streaming.
Oh, yeah. It's like Netflix streaming, and haven't done Apple yet. So I'm going to look out for that one next time.
Because they're not doing like they're doing a fraction, right?
Yeah.
Of what everyone else is doing. Very cool. Well, should we wrap it up and then get to your four questions?
Oh, certainly.
All right. Well, before I go on my big spiel of all the things people listening to this need to know as far as websites and social media handles, I'm going to let Jordan tell you how to look up his stuff.
Certainly. You can find my stuff and my reel at my website. It is JordanDCrabtree.com. JordanDCrabtree.com. And that's D with 2 E's in the middle.
Oh, I was just about to ask what's D short for? And the answer is D.
D double E. Yeah.
That's cool.
Jordan D. Crabtree.
Jordan D. Crabtree. Excellent. All right. Well, like I mentioned, The Myth of Winter is in the Discover Indie Film TV series. Very proud of that. Very proud of the episode it's in, which is in Season 4, Episode 5. Just go to Amazon Prime Video. Any way you can get there. It's always best on a smart TV, so it's a little bigger. Gotta admit, I hate the idea of people watching films like yours on a phone.
It's the world we live in now.
It is the world we live in.
Yeah.
But go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, and go to Season 4, Episode 5, and enjoy. And if you want to learn more about this podcast and that TV series that accompanies it, go to discoveryindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And the Sherman Oaks Film Festival that Jordan submitted to, and we didn't even talk about it, but I bet when you submitted, we figured we'd be watching in the theater.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jordan was part of the COVID festival that we were trapped online for. But you can learn about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival that happens every November if you go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and its social media is at ShermanOaksFF. And by the way, Sherman Oaks Film Festival has a sister festival called Film Invasion LA, and you learn about that if you go to FilmInvasionLA.com or at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And I think that's all I needed to say. Oh, I didn't mention that I got a little note here. Give 5 stars. You know what? Give this podcast 5 stars wherever you're listening to it. Give the Discover Indie Film TV series 5 stars on Amazon, Amazon.com. If you find anything Jordan's done, give it 5 stars. If you find Myth of Winter on, you know, you go to his website and he's got a link to his Vimeo or his YouTube, give all that stuff 5 stars.
5 stars, yeah.
5 stars, click like, do all that. Do all that nice stuff. Be nice. All right. Well, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And thank you to whomever is listening.